succession number 27074, Reel 11.
Gordon Leader, so Bamberger, Reel 11. You were telling me about accommodation at Takale. Was the airfield defended at all in late 1940?
The aircraft, to my knowledge, had some Bofa guns on its fringes, but I never visited them or saw them and was not really aware of them, the air defences. Obviously, with the advent of the Germans, obviously they were moved in then if they had the guns on the island. But I couldn't say I ever saw a gun when I was a Bofa gun or something.
In that early stages, was there really a threat to the airfield from the Italians?
When I first arrived in Malta, and I'm talking about late 1940 now, November, December, to my knowledge and recollection, but remember, memories fail, I don't recollect the Air Force, the airfield at Takale being attacked once.
And what type of operations were you flying against, I'm thinking again against the Italian Air Force, but in November and December?
In November, December, remembering I never kept my log book as a diary, is I cannot recollect, except for the odd nuisance raid, mainly at night, from the Italian bombers, I cannot recollect scrambling once for a raid on Malta in that pre-Christmas period. I may have done, but I could look up my logbook if you'd uncollect all this thing. I can't.
So were you just patrolling at that period?
Yes, I assume so. There may have been a few scrambles, but certainly I have no memory of coming in contact with C-42s or Savoia bombers at all myself. It may have been because it was a quiet period, because the Germans were going to come in and the Italians were reorganising themselves or making space for the Germans to take over their airfields. They weren't staying away just because I had arrived on the island.
So what would your daily routine be like at that period? I'm thinking of, again, the period where it was just the Italians or before the Germans arrived.
Well, we'd be... I cannot remember exactly, but somehow I have a feeling we were divided into more than just two flights. We may have been in three batches. And, you know, you went on at dawn and then came off, say, 11. I can't remember the times now. So you went on standby, and then when you weren't on standby, you knew you wouldn't require, say, till the following dawn. You would sometimes by a bus, sometimes by what we call a galley, a horse and cart. You'd go down into Valletta and have a sort of a drinking session. But there was it was very relaxed. And I remember having our Christmas Day party. We had a Christmas Day football match. So you could imagine, for even having a Christmas feast and a fancy dress football match, we were not taking the war too seriously.
And when you were flying, what kind of kit were you wearing? Because obviously going into the winter months in Malta, was it the same as you'd wear in the UK, or was it tropical?
Basically, we flew, or to the best of my memory, in certainly what I call the battle dress colour of the time, khaki battle dress, trousers. We had khaki battle dress jackets, I'm certain, but normally we flew in, or I myself personally, flew in a pullover. To give, you know, something like a battle dress was more cumbersome. So I, and most of us, I'll say more or less, I would say we flew in what we wanted, but we flew in which we were most comfortable.
So I don't take it there was a very strict dress code amongst the pilots?
No, as regards fighter pilots, and I'm going back now to the Battle of Britain, right to the end of my flank, wartime, fighter pilots had no strict dress code. They flew in what they were comfortable in.
And did you wear a scarf at that time?
At that time, I do not recollect wearing a scarf of any description. I think it was just a shirt and a pullover. Can't remember flying with any lucky emblems or anything like that.
And obviously you were getting some time in with the Hurricane now.
Yeah.
Having flown Spitfires before.
Could you stop it? That time, I was flying Hurricanes, you know, for the first time really, because I'd only done 1 hour in England. Obviously I was getting to learn the aircraft, you know, how it turned and something about its manoeuvrability and become familiar with it, becoming at home with it. And also getting to know it. The island was small, but just getting to know the island as well. But I think certainly during December, I never came across, though I did some patrols, I never came across any enemy aircraft at all.
How did that Hurricane compare with a Spitfire? Was its performance perceivably different, or was there many similarities?
Well, as I've said previously, the Spitfire, I think probably even with flying later aircraft, was the only aircraft I ever got myself into a position where I struck myself, or I struck the Spitfire onto me. I may have repeated this previously, and I became part of the aircraft. The Hurricane, I got into the Hurricane and strapped myself in the Hurricane, not onto me. But the only thing, but due to your question, I better mention it now, is what did with the Hurricane, particularly Malta, the Hurricane could take punishment, whereas the Spitfire could not take anything like it. It was much easier to hit something strategically vital in a Spitfire, and it wasn't a Hurricane. You could knock big holes in the Hurricane, it still carried on.
Was visibility any different from the cockpits in Hurricanes and Spitfires?
As regards visibility, I'm fairly certain the visibility of a Spitfire was better than the Hurricanes, but with the lapse of time, I wouldn't like. With the lapse of time, I wouldn't like to compare one with the other. I think the Spitfire was better.
I mean, I have heard of pilots flying in Malta sometimes with the canopy open on the Hurricane to improve visibility. Would you remember that being the case for yourself, Tom?
certainly flying in Malta, first of all, because of the heat to start with, you got the habit of having the cockpit open. But due to the problems, well, of bailing out of any aircraft, and taking the, I call it a tactical situation, the situation in Malta where the enemy aircraft were always above, virtually without exception, I'm sure we must have flown with the hoods open to enable one to bail out more efficiently.
And you didn't have any problems with the Hurricane obviously operating from the grass strips at Takali?
Remember my previous experience of flying Spitfires, well, every airfield in England were grass airfields at that time. So Takali was no different. It may have been a little more uneven, but it was just a normal grass strip. And with the added advantage, the weather was always good, almost nearly always.
There wasn't a problem with dust at all, was there, in your time in Malta, taking off from the airfields?
The airfields in Malta were certainly dusty, and all the Hurricanes, I'm fairly certain, had what you call Vokes filters. That's V-O-K-E-S, Vokes filters, which was the object. They'd been designed like that for operating from the desert, and I'm sure all our machines in Malta had filters fitted.
Now, I think the situation changed drastically in January of 41 with the arrival of the Luftwaffe over Malta. What are your first memories of that occurring?
It was sometime, I think, about the 10th or 11th of January that a convoy involving the aircraft carrier Lustrous had been attacked by the German Air Force on its way into Malta, and they had damaged the Illustrious. And it was the arrival of the Illustrious in Malta Harbour, Valletta, that brought the wrath of the Luftwaffe down on Malta. And it was not small scale, no doubt from more detailed historical books you could get the more facts, but I remember plots of 50 to 80 aircraft coming over to attack the Illustrious. At that time in particular, that's what the Luftwaffe was obviously briefed to get. And probably at that stage, we probably had 6 aircraft on standby. Well, 6 aircraft was not very much. And I imagine all pilots, in the view of the chaos I've described earlier, the Illustrious being in Valletta Harbour, did their best to avoid the Lustrous being shot down, to shoot down any German aircraft that came within their orbit, but also no one wanted to die. And it was a particularly, what I call, ha- hazardous situation much more than, say, during the Battle of Britain. Because everything was operating in a small area. I mean, the target, the defending aircraft, the attacking aircraft were all operating in about 1 square mile. And so it was some... it was very, very hectic. And you fired off your guns. During the Battle of Britain, I remember some of the combat reports informed you how much ammunition you'd used. But I imagine in Malta, you sprayed it all over the place and just hoped to hit something. Sort of accurate gunnery in these, certainly these early days of the illustrious, was virtually impossible.
At that time as well, would your brief have been really to attack the bombers? Because when you were in the Battle of Britain period, you were purely engaged against the fighters. But with Malta, was the brief there just to attack the bombers first, or defend yourself against fighters?
In respect to Malta, our job was protect the illustrious on this particular few days or week or how long it lasted. So we did tend to just head for the harbour, and depending what height, but as normally these raids were over before you could gain any height at all, they're already over the island, you had to get things that came more or less down to you, not you going up to them. And I vaguely remember shooting at Stukas, who'd bombed the illustrious and were making off around the coast of Malta, flying at water level, sea level, and chasing them, but being aware that they had a good protective force of 109s outnumbering us. I think there were some Mackies with them as well, Italian Mackies, but certainly outnumbering us, I don't know, 10 to 1 or more. That you couldn't ignore that someone may be shooting at you or going to shoot at you. So you attacked, or let's say I attacked, with wanting to be an air ace, wanting to shoot down what was in front of me, but with an element of self-preservation. I think there were some pilots who got carried away with the attack and forgot the self-preservation and suffered accordingly, which is very sad. But there you could say they were probably braver than I was. But I couldn't see any point in being a dead pilot. I was no use to anybody.
How much of your experience in the Battle of Britain had prepared you for aerial combat? Because it sounds to me very much like you were aware of what could happen with the fighter protection.
If I had gone out to Malta, now I'm talking about the Luftwaffe. If I'd gone out to Malta, as I was when I joined in the Battle of Britain, 610 Squadron, I don't think I'd have lasted 24 hours. It was my experience during the Battle of Britain, well, that I'm alive today.
When you were attacking the Stukas, what type of a target did they present as opposed again to the fighters?
I always looked upon Stukas, and I'm credited with shooting three of them down, I think, officially. I always looked at them as a very easy target. They had a gunner, but I don't, it never entered my mind that he could hit me. So from that point of view, But it was the 109's crashing past with cannon blare that, well, they made you somewhat apprehensive.
Would you have had a specific way of attacking the Stukas when they were heading at water level?
No, just slides from above, so you didn't fly into the water yourself, because the reason they were flying low, hoping that it would put you off. No, you definitely attack from above, but, I mean, the rear gunner of the Stuka was of no concern. I mean, they may have shot people down rear guns of the Stuka, but never entered my head, he could shoot me down.
Was the Hurricane's performance much, was it much better than the Stukas?
Oh, the Hurricane was quite adequate to attack the Stukas. It had a great job trying to chase the Ju-88s. It hardly catch a Ju-88s. And if you got above one, which I never did, you could probably chase it. The one time I did chase a Ju-88, and this was, I think I was with McLaughlin, and we were chasing it, and we weren't making much progress, and eventually we abandoned the chase and returned to Carly. It turned out it was Warburton, that very famous photograph of Ragonson Fowlers, flying an American Maryland, who we'd never seen before.
How far would you chase, say, a Stuka out to sea from the island?
At the time I'm talking about, which virtually I'd say would cover the whole time I was flying from Malta during the, well, which was all my time from January, when the Luftwaffe was there, I don't think I'd have changed it more than 5 or 6 miles, because I knew coming back the 109s would be around and probably looking for easy meat, so I didn't chase it far.
With the 109s, were they still continuing to use the tactics that you described occurring in the Battle of Britain, where they would make one pass at your aircraft?
The 109s, in particular, over Malta, were more aggressive than during the Battle of Britain. Mainly, I think, because they knew they were in a winning position. I mean, if I'd been in their position, and I'd been flying with the Luftwaffe, I'd have looked at radar monitor as a turkey shoot, because there would be the Hurricanes staggering up. And all you've got to do is dive, shoot at them, climb up again, and then go and have another go. And I think, unless you went mad, occasionally you went mad, you would assume if they'd attacked you once, you'd gone into a tight turn, they'd be up there again waiting to try and find you flying straight and level or climbing up slowly to have another go. So it's just, you knew your capabilities, you all had a fair idea of theirs. And but occasionally, see, adrenaline flows, it did during the Battle of Britain. And you could go a bit crazy and do something stupid. From a self-preservation point of view, you may stand on your tail and virtually have, not flying at all, you know, but you start shooting at one above you. But, I mean, if another aircraft had come along, another 109, you were just sitting ducks in the sky, hovering virtually. But occasionally, sort of, you know, one, I don't know, got irritated, lost your temper, or got fed up, or frustrated.
And would you take that out? Would that manifest itself in the way that you attacked another aircraft?
Well, yes, it definitely did, because a 109 come down and overshoot you and climb up. But remember, it was coming down at an excessive speed. You were climbing up, you had no speed. But as you felt hopeless, you may just pull your nose up and try and fire at him while he was climbing away, which would make you, if there was another one now, make you very, very vulnerable indeed. But, you know, there's a limit you can put up with being sort of potted at.
Because it sounds to me very much like you'd achieved a balance in your own mind as to the limitations that you were going to take. You described it very well with how you would preserve your life as well as being in, still attacking aircraft.
Yeah.
And you said that some pilots would sometimes go a little too far. Would you say that you could sometimes gauge that in people's attitude to flying, that they may not have had the same sort of balance?
Possibly, I better talk about McLaughlin again, Mac. Though he was a flight lieutenant and I was a lowly sergeant pilot, we got on very well together. And in his book, he describes getting grouped together. And the idea was to get a group of the most aggressive pilots and try and do something spectacular. We never succeeded, but that was his idea. Now then, but memory remember, over a period, you know, and time there, you know, so, you know, whether it was 1941 or 1945, things all concertinas together. But I'm fairly certain I was flying with McLaughlin, who was probably the most aggressive pilot in 261 at that time. And I'd done one or two little aggressive things with him, flying as his number two. I flying with him when he got shot down and his arm was shot off. Now then, you see, it's difficult to make, I don't imagine this. But I think it would have been a natural thing for me when we were attacked to shout out we were being attacked. I'm sure, it may say in his book, his own thoughts, I'm sure Mac heard me shout out. But Mac went on attacking because that was Mac and he got shot down. He lived to die another day. But probably that may describe a slight difference, you see. I knew we were being attacked. I broke into the attack. He went on shooting, whatever we were shooting at, 109, I think it was. It says so in his book, anyway. I think it says so.
Because that must have been a very difficult situation, considering the number of the odds against you.
Yeah.
It must have been very hard sometimes to...
Well, the point is, there he was. Remember, I flew as his number two. So whatever we were attacking, I think it was 109, he'd be closer to it and had that little better chance of probably getting it, you see. I was behind him. And being behind him, I was the one getting attacked. So I shout that we're getting attacked and I break, you see. Mac didn't and got shot down.